The Unitarian Universalist minister Victoria Safford recounts a story of wandering through a cemetery in New England, where she found a, quote, strangely soothing epitaph. She writes, "The name of the deceased and her dates had been scoured away by wind and rain, but there was a carving of a tree with roots and branches, a classical 19th century motif, and among them the words, she attended well and faithfully to a few worthy things. At first, this seemed to me a little meager, a little stingy on the part of her survivors. But I wrote it down and have thought about it since, and now I can't imagine a more proud or satisfying legacy. She attended well and faithfully to a few worthy things. Every day, I stand in danger of being struck by lightning and having the obituary in the local paper say for all the world to say, she attended frantically and ineffectually to a great many unimportant and meaningless details. Safford asks, how do you want your obituary to read? He got all the dishes washed and dried before playing with his children in the evening? Or maybe she balanced her checkbook with meticulous precision and never missed a day of work, missed a lot of sunsets, missed a lot of love, missed a lot of risk, missed a lot, but her money was in order. Or maybe it would read, she answered all her calls, all her emails, all her voicemails, but along the way she forgot to answer the call to service and compassion and forgiveness. Or maybe he gave and forgave sparingly, without radical intention, without passion or conviction. How will it read? Safford asks. How does it read? And if you had to name a few worthy things to which you would attend well and faithfully, what, I wonder, would they be? I've been increasingly aware that there are old people everywhere. The moment it dawned on me was in graduate school when I looked down at the breakfast I had chosen for myself, the plain whole milk yogurt accompanied by bran flakes. I had become an old person, I thought to myself, mirroring a breakfast that I remembered my grandfather and my father, I don't know if enjoying is the right word, but partaking for sure. I've been increasingly aware of the old people around us because I have realized that each of us has an old person within us, or at least the idea of one. As Ken Dweckerd writes, each of us has an elder within, made up of all of the images we possess about later life. I wonder what your old person, your elder, looks like inside of you. Is it a fierce and strong and determined person, or is it a feeble, a little bit confused and disoriented person? I wonder what images came to mind when you were a child or a young person about what it meant to age. Was it about grace and dignity, about slowing down and finding what was most meaningful, or was it a slow, gradual descent into uselessness? These elders within form a mental model for us, a mental model for what we think is possible as we grow older. And of course, what is inconceivable is imperceivable. What is inconceivable is imperceivable, and vice versa. This means that if the elder within us is a body that we would not want to be, then I imagine growing old is a process that we numb ourselves to, and can't imagine the joy, the growth, the wisdom, and the power of growing older. For our mental models shape our possibilities. As Dweckert continues, if images of these elders within are negative, then living longer could become an extension of the unpleasant and the unrelenting decline. If these images are positive, if our elders within are healthy, involved, active, and full of life and learning, then the gift of extended life might hold the promise of a dramatic and unprecedented expansion of our opportunities for growth, adventure, wisdom, experience, and love. Is your elder fragile or fierce? Wounded or wise? Futile or friend? Aged or saged? It was a woman named Jane Gibson that transformed my vision of what an elderly person was. I was a college student, part of a group that was creating an intentional community, and we were partnering with an Anglican church that the diocese had been threatening to close because it was getting a little too old. Jane was part of this committee that would meet with us as we figured out how we were going to live in this intentional multi-faith community. Now, Jane had lived in Ottawa her whole life, and she was 72 years old. She would attend all of our meetings. Well, she would bike to all of our meetings, even in the winter, even when it was snowing. It wasn't uncommon that we would open the door and there would be a box of zucchinis and nasturtiums and other things from her farm that she had just dropped off for us. Whenever we headed to a protest along the various our college careers, there was Jane and her group of raging grannies, these women that would dress up in shawls and have these witty protest songs. She would come to our meetings in which we would tell her the problems we were struggling with, and she would just look at us with such delight and care and tell us about her life. I realized that the image of the elder that I had was not one of vitality or liveliness or a commitment to justice, but was something bound up rather than unleashed. And so I thank Jane for that glimpse of possibility. And yet, I've been reflecting a lot about what our own visions are of our futures. This week, this month, is the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall riots in New York, a momentous occasion where trans women, women of color, and other marginalized people fought against a police force that was enforcing our society's anti-inclusive our society's prejudice against gender nonconforming and queer people. As I was thinking about this moment in time, I remembered a comment that my friend, the Reverend Joe Cherry, said about his growing up and coming out. Joe is in his late 40s, early 50s, and he told me once that when he was coming out in the early 90s, he could not imagine living past 40. He couldn't imagine living past 40. That most of his friends were living with or dying from AIDS during the height of the epidemic. To come out in that time was to not have a future, to not be able to imagine the possibility of living or growing old. And he spoke about both the pain that that caused him and his community to live with that weight upon their chest, but also the imperative that it invited, an imperative to fight, an imperative to live, an imperative to create community amongst the pain and the brokenness. That image of not seeing a future and knowing that these mental models can predict who we become has made me deeply realize how we live, as Clark says, in a very fragile relationship with age. there's fragility about it. Even as I'm speaking now, I'm constantly attending to what words I use. Right? Elder, old, senior citizen, elder. There's pain in these words. Getting it wrong means something. Because, as Simone de Beauvoir says, the vast majority of mankind looks upon the coming of old age with either sorrow or rebellion. It fills them with more aversion than death itself. Being old is not desirable or worthy in our society, and therefore I don't want to be old, therefore I'm not old. You don't look old. You don't look old. You certainly don't feel old, right? Don't admit it if you do. Which made me chuckle when I saw this picture in a newspaper. The headline says, 65 years old is still young. It goes on to quote a bunch of studies, but what really caught my attention was these new criteria to divide human life. It says that if you're under 17, you're underage. That if you're 18 to 65, you're a youth. That if you're 66 to 79, you're middle-aged. If you're 80 to 99, you're elderly. And if you're over 100, you're a long-lived elderly. Well, there is beauty in what this categorization is trying to show us. There's also, I think, a deep falsehood. The truth, of course, is that getting older involves loss, it involves pain, and it involves challenge. Speaking with many people in our congregation, I have heard the experience of the seasons of life. The first season is when your community and your friends start to get married, and then the babies come. And then you start attending more memorials and funerals than you do weddings. And that just continues. That there are seasons of loss involved in aging. But there's also a falsehood that these sorts of stories are trying to push against. The falsehood is that growing older is to become irrelevant or burdensome or meaningless. And so our invitation is to find the truth in between. The truth that doesn't cause us to think of old age or growing older as simply falling into disuse in retirement, that causes us to try to keep up in vain. As Rabbi Sherman says, to remain productive, to have an active life, is how we can perpetuate the myth of remaining frozen in our prime years. As we age and enter the later stages of our life, we cannot afford to remain addicted to the habits of rushing and conquering that we acquired during earlier phases. We must find worth outside of doing. As one man shared in this book, From Aging to Saging, I'm growing old despite my best attempts. Despite my best attempts to fill my days with what they euphemistically call meaningful activities, I feel that life is on the inevitable downhill trajectory. Suddenly, with all this free time, he says, my mind is flooded with memories of relationships that went sour and regrets over the road not taken. I feel a dull ache inside of me, almost as if something is calling to me, but I can't make out what he is saying. There is this opportunity to find the truth between irrelevancy and trying to keep up with eternal youth, to find wisdom and worthiness at every age and every stage. Lawrence Lerner, in this poem, It's Time, I think, captures this beautifully. It is time I admit that I am old, or getting old, at least. It's time, my friends, stop challenging me to feats of memory or games of tennis. They are not so young themselves. Every sinew is charged with the same message, the creak of a disintegrating body. By now, I catch every hint dropped by my body. I can hear it saying, look, I am just as old as you are. When the brain sends a message with its usual insistence to its deferential friends, muscle and limb, they do not bestir themselves as eagerly as they've done within living memory. I'll console myself by inspecting my memory. Where are those great achievements of my body? The times my legs found their way by themselves over wet rock among yew tree, red and old, and twisted in soft sand, far from my friends, exhausted and frightened, unable to send a message. Now listen. This is an important message. Find some way to lodge it in memory. Visible in the averted eye of friends are the facts you haven't admitted about your body, marks how their voices are different from of old. Their words twist awkwardly around themselves. Can the facts of life somehow arrange themselves to convey for once a significant message? Not just once I was young and soon I shall be old, but the sense that in the structure of your body, you and the world have at last made friends. Sooner or later, even my closest friends will think about nothing except themselves. Each will have trouble enough with his own body, his head, with one repetitive message. One day, you will not even be a memory, and admitting this will not keep you from growing old. This is the old story. Loss of friends, loss of memory, these words themselves with their empty message outlasting soul and body. It's a little depressing. But I think it captures something. I think it captures this sense of what it means to move through and one's body to shift and change. But the phrase that I love the most is, but the sense that in the structure of your body, you and the world have at last made friends. Because I think that is the true gift of aging, is to, as is said in the poem, be able to catch every hint that has been dropped by your body, to make friends with the world, to make friends with your body, and to make friends with aging. To invite questions that say, what if ailments doesn't mean alienation? To say that merely simply having to be shut in doesn't mean that you need to be shut out. That slowing down doesn't mean shutting down. That invitation to slow and to change does not mean expiration. This is the wisdom of growing older, the wisdom that allows us and sometimes forces us to listen to the wisdom of our bodies, to not care what others say or think, to experience the hard-fought wisdom of our lives lived, that sense of selfhood congealed, that slowing down allows us to do more than just survive, but actually to thrive. It allows us to maybe attend well and faithfully to a few worthy things, because you can't try to do it all. There's a story that is told about some Incan tribesmen that were leading an archaeologist to a site of exploration. It was deep in the mountains, and after they had been moving for some time, the tribesmen stopped and insisted they would not go further that day. The archaeologists grew impatient and angry, but respected it. They waited another day. They waited another day. They got increasingly upset and irate. Why can't we just continue on to go to the place? It's not that far. We've been there before. But no matter how much they cajoled the tribesmen, they would not go any further. Then all of a sudden, one day, 5 days after they had stopped, the tribesmen changed their attitudes. They stood up, they picked up their gear, and set off once more. Bewildered, the archaeologists asked why they had stopped and refused to move for so long, and the tribesmen answered, "We had been moving too fast, and we had to wait for our souls to catch up with our bodies." So much of our lives, no matter how old we are about doing. They're about the world of things, of labor, of the material world, the world of space. In our younger years, we are growing up unaware in some ways of the passage of time. It seems abundant and plentiful. We grow up into our young adulthood and we clean up all the kind of emotional and intellectual debris that we've acquired in our growing up years, pruning it away, trying to find ourselves, raising families, making ends meet, finding ways to accomplish our goals. And then we come to this later phase in life. And as Abraham Joshua Heschel, the Jewish rabbi, says, that if we only amass a wealth of information but miss the embrace of sacred moments, we have not lived well. And so one of the gifts of aging is a new attention to time. Time is how we break the addiction to trying to stay in the saddle. It breaks our conception that humans are human doings versus human beings. And what has helped me most thinking about this relationship with time is actually the Jewish practice of the Sabbath, of Shabbat. For at the sunset on Friday, observant Jews will cease all work. All of the food that needs to be prepared will be ready. The family will amass, candles will be lit, prayers will be said, and for 24 hours or until the sun sets the next day, work ceases. The work of the world, the labors of the soil, of employment, of getting things done, fade away and are replaced with a new experience of time. Heschel writes that we lay down the yoke of toil and work to be able to care for the sacred seed of eternity that is planted in our souls. That in the Sabbath we shift from having to being, from owning to giving, from controlling to sharing. And wrote, one ought to enter old age the way one enters the senior years of university in exciting anticipation of consummation. That these years allow us to attain our high values. It may enable us to attain our high values that we have failed to sense, insights we may have missed, wisdom we may have ignored in our formative years. And only in slowing down and realizing the sacredness of time, not simply of accomplishments, but time, of understanding what is true in the long view, may we truly move from simply aging, as Zalman Shaalee says, to actually saging. To ask the question, what wisdom have I amassed in this lifetime, in this body, and what truly is it used for? Because there is this great opportunity in this time of life where wisdom has built up, where life has been experienced, to help our next generation and our world realize what is truly important. But if we miss that moment, the sacredness of slowing down, we'll all be robbed of that opportunity. Amen.